and welcome to the July 6th In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the new SDPB studio in Sioux Falls is Mac guru Joel Brovelite. Hi, Joel.
Hey.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah, it's got that new studio smell.
It does have that new studio smell. Also, it just could be Amos, though, too. Amos Aesop is here.
I bring my own studio smell with me.
Exigent Chief Security Officer.
Yes.
Amos Aesop is here.
Hi, guys.
And joining us today. And so I take it 4th of July went well.
I got all my fingers.
Yeah. I see that. You're typing on all 10 or 8 fingers and 2 thumbs,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Jeff Litterick joins us from the Bureau and Peer. Hello, Jeff. We'll get Jeff on just as quick as he can. Hi, Jeff. Happy July. Well, we'll get Jeff on here in just a little bit, but I did want to talk about 4th of July a little bit. Did soggy fireworks, or did you go out the next day? Or
Fireworks this weekend, I guess, now.
Oh, you're not?
Yeah, rescheduled, so.
You know, that's more convenient, isn't it?
Yep.
To a weekend?
Yep.
Joel, anything?
I went bowling.
Blow anything up?
I went bowling.
I saw in the news that a lot of towns are skipping their traditional blowing things up because of fires and other things, and going to drone displays and lasers.
Yeah. You know, the only article I happened to read about that was that just before the show in Las Vegas on the Strip, there was supposed to be a drone show, and apparently it wasn't announced, or not many people knew about it anyway. The first drone went up to start the show, struck a bird, and then fell and hit a lady in the audience, and she had lacerations on her face. And so, cool technology. I've seen that the drone show when they did it. Would they do it out in Vegas for something? Oh, for CES, for a computer, a consumer electronics show. They did a drone show, and it was pretty cool. But at that time, it was away from people, you're banking on that technology working correctly to keep people from getting hurt, and that could be a problem.
Well, famously, they did it for the opening of the Winter Olympics.
Oh, true.
Yeah,
Seoul.
Right.
Yeah.
Pre-taped it.
That was insane.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw.
I did see. Did they pre-tape that opening or something? They didn't actually do it live, or was that the Super Bowl?
That I don't know.
It must have been the Super Bowl. They probably did the Olympics live.
Yeah. Well, and they did Vegas live too, and it's a way cool technology, especially with the ability to turn lights on and off and have things move around without being able to see them behind a dark sky. It's incredibly awesome, but you have to bank on Mother Nature not supplying thunderstorms or wind or birds or anything else that might cause.
Although, to be fair, not much different than fireworks, thunderstorm, and wind.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
There can be accidents.
Yep.
Bad accidents with fireworks. I probably watched a half a dozen YouTube videos last night.
Yeah. It's very un-American to not blow something up, though.
Right.
It is. Maybe. Right. Maybe.
Yeah. Some of the videos I was watching too would be like time-lapse photography over the one I happened to watch was over LA, where it's actually illegal to shoot fireworks off in the city. But it was nonstop, the fireworks that were going up. And it was really an incredibly beautiful display with the time-lapse. Nobody seems to adhere to the rules.
I know my neighbors didn't.
Oh yeah, mine have. My neighborhood's been going for 2 weeks now, or whenever they started selling them, it's been going nonstop.
Yeah, it's okay a little bit here and there. The aerial stuff, I got a lot of trees in my neighborhood, so
oh.
I just know that something's going to catch one of these times.
Yeah. Well, luckily the weather's made that all right.
I really enjoyed the fireworks on PBS on the night of the 4th. The Capitol 4th celebration there with you got the Washington Memorial or and the fireworks going off and it's just, it's fairly amazing. And the music was wonderful. And I kind of went, oh, everything's going to be a letdown after this, mm-hmm. really. But, I thought the tech was interesting is that Intel is bringing forth a lot of that. Sort of meshing the drones kind of a thing.
Drone shows I've seen have always been sponsored by Intel. I don't know if anybody else does it as well.
So I would imagine there's probably drone teams from other companies.
I'm sure.
There's probably Samsung in South Korea, if I had to guess.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
If there's money in it, Uber will be into it, and you can just,
right,
you know, get out your app and order a drone show.
Your drone has arrived. Please step outside.
That's becoming a reality, too, but yeah, we'll probably talk about that on future shows. I hear that Jeff Litterk has joined us. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
How's your fourth?
Pretty good. Nice fireworks display. Though I will say the pictures some people took from the back end of the Capitol and in Lead were actually my favorite part of the fireworks display. So some photographers got up above the fireworks in Lead and actually took some pretty stunning photographs looking down on the airburst. So
that was they were spectacular. I did share those on Facebook. Sorry, Amos, you can't see those, but I'll bet you can maybe search Twitter or something and get to those. But yeah, some amazing shots of fireworks and the state capitol, and there was some great stuff out of Mitchell and Watertown, and do enjoy seeing those as those photographers upload from all over the state. All those displays is really, really great. So we have a show today, and we're asking folks to call in if you'd like. Our 800 number is 800-524-3604. If you have a question for a panelist today, we will take any tech calls or tech-related items that you happen to have. Don't be shy. Our text number is 956-STPB. That's 956-7372 if you prefer to do that. If you're a Twitter user, my Twitter account is at KentSDPB, and you can shoot me a note there. Most folks enjoy the email address. It's inthemoment@sdpb.org. That's all just one word, inthemoment@sdpb.org. We'll get a message to us as well, and we will discuss your topic on the air today. Absolutely. Big birthday we should talk about. The Apple Store. That app store that we use to download apps is 10 years old. And it wasn't, here's the interesting part, it wasn't a part of the first iPhone that came out.
No, it didn't come out until...
the next year?
No. I believe it was 5 years later, maybe. Maybe it was 4 years. It's quite a bit later. I think it coincided with the release of the iPhone 4, if I'm not mistaken. Somebody can bust me on that if I've got it wrong. But, you know, it was a good long time, actually. For a while, you were able to buy a few game apps from the iTunes store. But the, you know, the big change was the App Store and the third-party developers was, I think, yeah, with the iPhone 4. So
four years later. Why did Jobs resist as long as he did?
Well, I mean, typical of Steve Jobs, he wanted to kind of keep everything in-house because, you know, the advantages of keeping everything in-house is everything runs the way you want it to, and you don't have to worry about issues of compatibility, which, you know, up until the App Store, you know, software, you would buy software either online, but most people still bought it in person on a disk or whatever it was. You know, the controls on what works and doesn't work was not near as good. But with the App Store, you know, things get vetted by Apple so well that, and it gets combed through by Apple so well that compatibility is a much less of an issue than it was back then. But, you know, I think it was originally just he wanted to keep everything in-house. But I think, as I had mentioned earlier when we were off air, you know, he kind of saw the writing on the wall, whether that was somebody bringing it to his attention or not, that people are going to, you know, what we call jailbreak the phone or crack the phone so that you can install software whether you like it or not. And before that, it was becoming a big enough thing where, you know, a large percentage of iPhones were being cracked so that they could be used to install third-party software. I think they just decided, you know, let's just regulate this and you know, take 30% off the top, and that 30%
billions
has been, yeah, well more than billions. Yes.
Yeah. And it's turned some developers into billionaires.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's been nothing but good. There was a lot of initial resistance to the App Store by developers. They're saying, well, Apple's taking this much money and, you know, we can only charge this 99 cent, which was kind of the entry-level price and almost the mean price for a very long time. And now it's a little higher than that, but, you know, software costing more than $10 on the App Store is still kind of unusual. So they said, well, we'll never make enough money on that. You know, and then there was that little game called Angry Birds that proved that wrong. You know, 99 cents at a time, you can make quite a bit of money. So, yeah, it really revolutionized. Now, you know, as you had mentioned earlier off air, you know, now Microsoft has an app store. Certainly Google has, you know, easily the largest competitor app store for their products.
Play, yep.
But they're not the only ones. You know, Samsung has an app store. If you sell applications or have a platform that can have applications no matter what, you have an app store, whether that's the Amazon Alexa or whatever.
Why do you think part of the win for this? So the developers won, Apple obviously won in their bank account. Consumers won, made it easy to download stuff, and it was typically you know, clean software. There wasn't a problem with the software they were downloading maliciously or
yeah, especially with Apple. Less so with other, but mostly, you know, the upside is also the downside. You know, Apple keeps really tight controls on their software, much to the bereavement of many app developers, because their requirements are so finicky. But the upside is you get really clean software. It's not the case necessarily with the Google Play Store or the Google App Store.
No, they're trying.
Oh, yeah.
I see that there's like a DRM they're starting to use.
Of course, yeah.
And
that's much better than it originally was. But, you know, when you support lots of different hardware and lots of different software, it's not as possible. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses no matter what you do.
So just doing a little looking, I found a report here by App Annie, which apparently is a mobile applications intelligence platform. And for the 10-year anniversary, they released a few pieces of information here. The total iOS App Store downloads since July of 2010, 170 billion. Total spend through the App Store is $130 billion. I mean, so we're talking some significant money that's gone through here that would not have been had this, you know, technology not been around. And they're saying the can you guess the number one downloaded app of all time through through the App Store?
Oh boy!
And I would have forgotten about this, but I guess it makes sense.
Joel. Got to guess.
It's a game. It's got to be
a game.
Yep. Candy Crush.
It is. It's Candy Crush Saga. Yeah.
I should download it because I've never actually played it.
I haven't either. Followed by Subway Surfers, which I've never heard of. And then
my daughter loves that.
Fruit Ninja. Yeah.
Fruit Ninja.
Clash of Clans. Minion Rush. Angry Birds is number 7. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about that one. And then some Temple Run.
That's all.
So these are all entertainment.
There's no
business apps in here.
The title on that is Top Games.
I mean, well, to be fair, you know, you go ahead.
That was Top Games. Sorry, I was in the wrong category. The top app of all time, Facebook.
Oh, interesting.
Facebook, then Facebook Messenger, YouTube,
Instagram.
Is that
top app including games or not including games?
This says top apps by all time worldwide downloads.
Oh, okay, interesting. Interesting.
YouTube, Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger.
YouTube.
So 1, 2, 3, 4. The top 5 are all social media type. Mm-hmm. Then Google Maps, Snapchat, Skype, WeChat, and QQ, which I'm not familiar with. Apparently, is a China based
social media
app.
You bet.
Yep. So 9 of the top 10 are social media apps or ways to communicate. Anyway.
Right. And one of the big ones you're not using anymore, Facebook.
Right.
You actually did uninstall that.
I uninstalled it. And I'm not sure if it's been a while since I've been on, but I've been off for probably a month and a half now. I've thought about it maybe twice of reinstalling because someone told me about something they saw. But then I just got the information through them. I was able to Google it some other way. And I haven't really looked back. And I have noticed my battery lasts longer on my phone now. So I'm good for now. There are things that I'm missing out on. There's you know, some invitations to events that people have put out there that I've got to get through text message and just other life events. But
I imagine a family knows that they need to text you rather than get a hold of you through Facebook, they can probably deal with that.
Yep.
But, okay, well, we'll...
And it's not because I don't like Facebook. I just, for me, it was kind of a social experiment for myself. Was I addicted? Was it something I would miss? Could I go 2 days without it?
So is your account is still basically on hold.
You could always log in and it will come right back to where it was.
And Facebook will beg you to come back, I'm sure. Have they done that yet?
Not yet. I haven't heard a thing from them yet.
Oh, huh, okay. Nope. That's one of the things I had heard was they'll entice you to come back and then you'll sip the water again and away you go. But, well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about that Thai cave rescue that's relying on some ingenious tech to get the those boys and their coach back from deep inside the cave. We'll do that after this. And welcome back to this 6th of July in the moment, Tech Radio. Again, I'm Kent Osborne. We have Joel Brovelite, John T. Myers in Norway, lucky dog.
Yes.
And we hope for his safe return soon.
He's probably listening online, though.
I would hope.
Hi, John.
No question.
Give us a call, John. The 800 number is 800-524-3604. I know it works internationally. Amos Asip is here from Exigent and from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Jeff Litterick also joins us on the line to take your calls, your questions, your comments. And we did have one. We got a text message. I used the free version of CC Cleaner on my laptop. Is there any advantage to subscribing to the paid version? Jeff, do you use CC Cleaner? And what is it?
No, I don't use CC Cleaner. I'm kind of hesitant. One of the things to be aware of is there's a lot of what we call fake malware cleaners and virus cleaners and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there are some very legitimate ones too. And off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure which one is which. In terms of this particular one, usually the fake ones will tend to find a lot of stuff wrong with your machine when there's nothing wrong. And they seem to be advertised on TV quite a bit. So you do have to be a little bit careful. If it just goes through and it's not finding anything, the paid version is probably not going to do much more for you. In that you already can't do between your own system tools and what comes with your computer, be it Windows Defender and stuff. So I would probably do some reviews and do some Googling on it before I would pay anything for any of those, just to make sure it is a valid one and that you would get anything out of it beyond the free trial version.
Well, they had a pretty big hack
last
year.
So I'm familiar with CCleaner, and it's it would be in the category of legitimate software to download to make your computer run faster. It's not one of those that falls into the malware category, as they attempt to keep it a positive and a good system utility. I've used it a lot of times on a one-off basis where a machine is running poorly. You run it, it gets rid of malware, it gets rid of, you give the ability to delete cookies. There's all sorts of system utilities that it uses to clean it up. And the paid version allows you to do that on an automatic, programmatic basis, so you don't have to run it manually every time something's not working. So, you run it every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. and then you don't ever have to touch it again. The problem is CCleaner did have a major hack where, unbeknownst to them at the time, the binary went out, the binary being the piece of software that you use to install the system, and it installed the CCleaner, but it also installed some malware that went with it. That was picked up. It was they figured out that it happened. They've since rectified that. And I guess that's not really what the question was, but those sorts of things that you do download for those that are free, that are legitimate, you still have to be careful with that. You can't assume that just because it's a legitimate piece of software that every single one of them is going to be malware or problem free. Still pay attention to that sort of stuff. How would you know? It's tough. Even the people who were making this software didn't know for a little while, right?
I mean, it can be clean as a whistle for 9 years,
right?
And then all of a sudden,
right? Yeah,
you can get pretty confident.
So if you're using that sort of software and you're installing it on your computer, make sure you're keeping it up to date. Make sure you didn't install it 6 months ago and then you forget about it, because 6 months ago might have been the time where it was infected with something, make sure you're updating it so that if there are any updates that fix those sorts of issues, that they're being fixed. But to answer the question, I don't know if the money's worth it to run it on a regular routine basis. I use it on a as-needed basis, and I actually uninstall it when I'm done.
Yeah, there's some pretty good reviews out online.
Yeah.
Check those out. But it brings up a good point. There's just a couple weeks ago, Android phones, some folks that had downloaded an app for do some battery saving got infected by some really bad stuff. And the weird part is that the battery saving part of it actually worked. It actually went out and found those resources that were hogging and shut those off and did some things.
Mm-hmm.
But it also hacked their phone. It monitored, you know, your statuses and killed things. But it also took your IMEI number, your phone number, your type, your brand, your model, your location, all your SMS messages, and shot them back to headquarters for the bad guys. And it's part of that again. The Google marketplace is a little bit different than the Apple. It's not quite as locked down. And they're working on it. They're working on some DRM-like checks and balances that they're looking to make sure that the actual app that got submitted to Google is actually the one that's still downloading.
I would say that the Android actually has, though, maybe almost a little more fine-tuning that it can do, because you have, when you install an application on your Android, it's going to ask you, this is trying to access your SMS records or your SMS text messages. Do you want that to happen? And if you're installing something that's battery saving or is a flashlight application or is a game that has nothing to do with SMS, you can tell it no and say, I only want to allow it access to these parts of my phone that seem relevant to the item that it's working on your phone. Problem is that we all get in the habit of just yes,
tap,
allow,
okay,
without thinking it through. And sometimes it's difficult to know because, there were some people who were complaining that, why does Facebook Messenger need access to my microphone and camera? It shouldn't need to have that. I don't want it listening to me and spying on me. Well, because many people record voice messages or because many people take a picture and send it through that app. So the app had legitimate needs. So sometimes it's not always obvious as to why, but you'd really need to pay attention to those.
Exactly.
And one thing to really watch out for is, over time, if you've been using an app, if it asks for changes, it suddenly updates and now it needs new permissions. There's been a rash of these, and not just in apps, but in like Chrome extensions and Firefox extensions, where authors of these apps sell out their apps to third parties or other companies. This has happened with a Chrome extension called Style, a pretty popular one. It let you change how websites look. You could basically skin a website to make it look how you want it to look. So popular extension, the author sold it. The new company basically installed spyware through the whole thing and records everything you do now in your browser. Same thing with certain apps. This has happened in the past where the developer gets tired of developing for this, sells it off or abandons it. Someone else takes it over. That developer then adds a whole bunch of bad stuff. And usually you get the first hint when it updates, it's going to ask you for, well, I need all these new permissions now. So always ask yourself, even if you think you trust the app, if you get these prompts, think about them. Do some research and check before you just allow this app that suddenly for years never needed access to your phone records now wants access to your SMS and phone call services on your phone. So because they are out there. Not all app developers develop their apps forever. Many of these apps get sold and passed between companies over time. So.
And that's actually a thing right now, is you develop an app that's semi-useful, that gets a huge install base with the idea of selling it off to somebody else saying, hey, this is already on everybody's phones. Now you've got access to it. Just do an update and do whatever. So that is that's a problem. It's difficult to fix.
I can deliver all these people to you.
Right.
Wow.
That's it's eyeballs and it's screen time, and that's really what the name of the game is right now.
I was kind of rolling through Reddit earlier this morning on some tech forums, and there was one comment on one post that was simply this. It said, "The best antivirus is yourself."
Hmm.
And I stopped and I paused and I went, You know, not only is that brilliant, you know, but it's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Just put a period after it and put it on a meme and post it to Facebook, because it's true. You're the best antivirus you can have. I think the article was about maybe Windows Defender coming up with some better, the next version of Windows 10 is going to have some improvements and enhancements to the predictive behavior. It sees the apps aren't behaving the way it expects it to. Mm-hmm. So it shuts some things down and does some things. And one of the answers was just very simply, the best antivirus is yourself. And I paused and I went, that's perfect. Be observant. And then the other part is don't go downloading, all sorts of stuff you shouldn't be downloading.
Right.
One of the questions was, this particular person used a website that they probably shouldn't be for watching movies, but they weren't downloading anything else. They weren't downloading anything, any hacked apps or any, photos or any music or anything. They were just kind of using it to watch movies. And so they were keeping that all on one laptop, and then had a separate laptop that they were, was going to be their clean laptop. And
sure.
It's like, well, are you putting that on the same network as this, this dirty one?
Right.
Because
right.
you're doing the same thing. So the best antivirus is yourself. Don't do that. Don't put yourself at risk unnecessarily if you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you do need to, don't.
Right.
I guess.
Right.
It would be my comment. But anyway, great discussion today. Let folks in if you'd like. 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. Our phone number, 800-524-3604, is the number you can call and join us on the show. Twitter users, again, at KentSTPB, and the ever-popular email address, inthemoment@sdpb.org, is how you get a hold of us. Wanted to talk a little bit about this cave rescue that's going on. We sort of I've been a little bit enthralled with some of the coverage. It happened June 26th, so right before the big holiday. Apparently they're soccer. Well, they call them football in Thailand, but a soccer team was kind of celebrating, or they were on their way home from a match or to a match, and they went down into this cave and with their coach. And 12 of them, and sort of got the rains ensued and got trapped deep in this cave.
Yeah, bad timing.
Really, really horrible timing, and they weren't sure if the kids were going to make it out or not, or if they were alive. And the waters started to recede, and they started to sort of check this thing out, and lo and behold, everybody's apparently going to be okay. But the way that they found that out is some interesting tech. What was the most interesting thing for you, Amos?
You know, there's been a couple of them. One is the fact that we're bringing in multinational rescue teams, right, to rescue these kids and their coaches is pretty tremendous. But those teams are bringing with them that tech, and that tech includes things like some drones that they brought in, looking for these natural chimneys that are available to get into the caves, maybe some place that's a little closer that would allow them to make a more safe and quick rescue. The alternative, of course, would be to walk that dense jungle area where those caves are and hopefully stumble upon something. Whereas, if you got a couple of drones up there, maybe you find something that looks a little promising. The other thing too was they had talked about how, and I questioned, how do they communicate when they're deep inside this cave and they're, a mile and a half, 2 miles underground or into the cave and letting people know. They say it's an 11-hour round trip for a rescuer to head out, get to the kids, and then come back. So information, even at 11 hours, that's getting kind of old. It's difficult to have a conversation, really. But apparently they've got these mesh phones by MaxTech Networks that allows their mesh points, that allows the phones to talk to each other, so that even over, as you have phones at various distances through the caves, they relay that signal through, mm-hmm. And then it relays it back as well. So they've got some real-time communication that's able to happen that was brought in. Oh, I can't remember who the team was that brought that, but you know, that's the benefits of having these multinational rescue teams coming in. Everybody's got their piece of the puzzle. That certainly helps.
Yeah, the British diving team that first made contact used this thing called Hayphones.
Oh, right.
And they were the 20-year-old technology that developed it for British caving.
Yeah.
And the community, and it's a do-it-yourself kind of ultra low frequency kind of a thing, but hey, it works.
Right.
And boy, these drone operators, I'll tell you, they got to be way better than me, because the first thing I would do is these octocopters. There's eight blades on this thing.
Yeah.
And they got these 30 power zoom cameras and infrared.
Thermal
cameras on them. And about the first thing I do is they talk about there's could be like up to 100 entrances to this. Mm-hmm. So they're, instead of dispatching teams, they just throw a drone down that alleyway and see where it goes. And about the first thing I do is run that into a cave wall,
right,
and it'd be done.
Right.
And similar to that drone in Las Vegas.
And this is exactly where, when my mother was yelling at me growing up playing Atari and Dig Dug, and how is this ever going to help you in your career? There are people who have careers using joysticks saving lives, and it's not such a
or doing other things,
right?
Not saving lives,
no,
directly
racing or entertainment
lives.
Yeah.
Well,
that too. Yes.
And I wonder if these have that the newest DJI drones, the Phantom 4s and 3s, have the collision avoidance systems on them as well. So depending on how you're flying this, and you want it to either stop before it hits a tree, or mm-hmm. you can tell it to go over the tree automatically, or obstacle or whatever it is you're flying. So I wonder if it's got some collision avoidance built into it. It looks like this looks like a pretty not off-the-shelf drone that
Probably
I'm looking
not.
At here.
Probably
this is a pretty custom job, and I don't know if it's got any of that. So those drone operators got to be spot on,
right,
to be able to fly that thing. And it's, so kudos to them.
Yep.
It's more than I can do. Every time I put my drone in the air, I crash the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible. I mean, you don't even want to see the shell of my drone. It's got so many cracks and super glued and JB welded together, and it's a sight, I'll tell you that. But it's fun, but in this case, a great practical application, which is saving lives, and hopefully we'll see some fruit to that very, very soon, and get those kids reunited with their parents.
Yes.
And it'll be a wonderful thing. Anything else strike you in the tech end coming out of this besides drones and the mesh radios and
they mentioned they have brought in some underwater autonomous vehicles that could, but apparently the thickness of the water, the murkiness, the muddiness is too much for those devices. So, still cool technology that can navigate through, water and through caves if it needs to in order to get to someplace, but just not appropriate for this.
Robots, yep. Yeah. And those will become better and better as well. Mm-hmm. Deploy the robots, and Intel will just back up with their truck and open up the doors, and stuff will crawl out of there. And
do you watch Westworld?
I have seen many episodes. I haven't seen it all the way through to where it's at now.
I just finished the first season, and it makes me—it's a little scary that this is where technology is going. I mean, obviously that's an extreme case, but someday you might look at your own hands and say, am I a robot and I just don't know it?
You'll have enough implanted in you.
Who says I don't do that now?
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
All right. Well, this is the time we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll do a little roundtable. Each of our guests has a topic that they'll want to talk about, and we'll do that after this quick break. And we're back with the third half of this In the Moment Tech Radio for the 6th of July. And we've gathered the experts to talk tech today. Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite joins us. Amos Asop from Exigent is here. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications and Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us on the phone. And we're talking tech today. This is, I've started this thing at home. When something very obvious happens, I say, "Well, who didn't see that coming?" I'm kind of sarcastically, and there's some data is being released today from University of Herefordshire in the UK. I don't know if it's Worcestershire sort of on the H side, but they went out and bought a bunch of memory cards over the last 4 months. They got them from eBay. They got them from auction sites. They got them from secondhand shops, you know, traditional ways of getting used things. And I didn't know there was a market for used memory cards, data storage cards, but there is. And they went out and bought a bunch of these and ran file recovery software, which you can easily download on the internet, against those devices. And voila, they found contact lists, passport copies, selfies, intimate photos, other personal documents, resumes, browsing histories, navigation files, because these files come from, you know, they come out of drones and NatSav systems and out of phones and cameras and all sorts of things. It seems obvious to me that you would delete your files, mm-hmm. but maybe that makes so they're still recoverable. What do I need to do to safely, if I'm going to sell off a memory card or get rid of a device, Jeff? Is there do I need to write zeros? Is there a way? What do I do with this card if I want to get rid of it safely?
Well, the only safe way, as dictated by most of NIST standards, is to physically destroy it and not sell it. There is no good way to get rid of it, and this includes SSD drives. It's not like you can just write ones and zeros, because of the way the internal drives work. Sometimes some of that data is not going to be overridden no matter what you do. The only really way is what's called media destruction, and that's destruction of that media. So
that's not going to help my bank account, Jeff.
But you can make sure. The other ways is you could, if you're not worrying too much about the data, you could just delete the data. You could try to override it, but it's not really going to work very well, and then sell it off, realizing if someone's determined, they will get your data back out of there. But if they're the casual person, probably wouldn't be able to. So
if you end up with a handful of secondhand memory cards, you probably... selling's not a great option, depending on what's on it, I guess.
You know, and it's the chief security officer in me that says, don't use secondhand cards, because even if they're, you know, even if they are supposedly erased, there could be malware on them. It could be a method for distributing that sort of stuff. One of the social engineering techniques that we do for testing for some of our customers is we drop USB drives in parking lots. Somebody gets out of their car, they say, ooh, what's this? What might be on it? And the first thing they do is run it in and they stick it in their USB drive just to see. It could be legitimate, could be like, I know, you know, I want to see if this is Mary and I need to get it back to Mary's, or it could be for, you know, voyeuristic purposes. But that is a terrible thing to do, because that same thing could have malware on it that is meant to infect your machine internally, allow attackers to get in, etc. So, that being said,
but Amos, what if there's all kinds of cool things on that drive?
There could be, and it's very tempting. And the best thing to do is to go in and give it to your IT department and let them put it onto a machine that's isolated and made for just such an event. That being said, there are numerous examples of brand new devices off the shelf or given out at conferences or whatever, where there's malware embedded directly from the manufacturer too. So, make sure your antivirus is up to date.
All right. Okay. Amos, since we're with you, HQ Trivia. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, it was the thing I've got a slight addiction to. It's been around for a little while, and more people are picking up on it. In fact, just about every game has close to a million, if not 2 million players. But online trivia game every day, a couple times a day. Our time zone is usually like, 2 or 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock in the evening. It's 12 questions. You play those questions and you win cash. They've got a prize pool that is divided amongst all the winners. Sometimes you can win $50. Sometimes you win 38 cents. Just depends on how many people win. And it's live. That's kind of the cool thing. The technology part of it, you know, there's a guy or a gal who hosts it live on your phone. They read you the question, and then you've got 3 buttons to push. It's super simple, super easy, doesn't cost anything to play. And you don't even have to sign up until you win. And then you have to give them your PayPal information so that you could, you know, move the money into your bank account. But once you've got that done, then you can play this game. And it's actually bleeding into other areas now. There's a new one. I haven't seen it yet because it's for iOS, called Gravy, which is gamifying shopping, right? So it's supposed to be like a Price is Right type thing where you've got 60 seconds to decide how much this item is going to go for. And again, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know all the ins and outs, but it's a neat way to drive eyeballs and to drive a sense of urgency to do something, and is really picking up steam with the commercial areas because they know they've got all these eyeballs. A lot of sponsors on HQ Trivia, whether it's a TV show, The Voice did it, The Rock did it with his new show. There's been other various sponsors. Sometimes they give away. Well, I guess during the NBA Finals, they were giving away $100,000 per game. So on game four, they were giving away $400,000. So it's not trivial amounts of money sometimes. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of games where, no pun intended, thank you, trivia. There are some games where they go down to one winner for $25,000. Anyway, check it out, HQ Trivia. It's in the Android and iOS stores, and it's fun. It's takes maybe 15 minutes of your time.
And this is on their time, not your time. So this isn't a just go to it when you're bored. This is a specific.
Nope, it's live. Yep, you've got to wait. I get a push notification that says it's going to be on in the next 3 minutes, and so you really hope your conference calls are done. You really hope that whatever you're eating for supper is going to sit while you go do something for 15 minutes. It's you got to play it on their time.
Okay, I'll check that out. And that sounds like an interesting deal. And Gravy on the iOS side. And have you heard of this, Joel?
I have heard of it. I haven't tried it because the last time I heard about it, I wrote it down to try it, and then I couldn't remember what it was. So no. Now I'm gonna have to try it.
Now you're gonna write it down again.
Yeah.
All right. Any big topics you want to talk about today? Just as we're kind of closing the show out.
Well. I'll just draw attention. Some news came out just before we went on air today. The FCC just put forth a decision on a 3-2 vote. No shock that was on party lines to pull Lifeline funding for tribal residents, which is kind of a big effect. In South Dakota, Lifeline is basically if you live in a rural area and you're low income and don't have access to internet and or telecom for emergency purposes or just normal day to day, I need to live a life and do things. There's a program called Lifeline that it's not just in rural areas, but for anybody low income, you have access to. Up to $25 per month, a subsidy to get access to, either telecom or internet. And Ajit Pai's FCC just voted to remove that for tribal residents. So we'll have to see. I'm assuming a lawsuit is pending, but that's a big deal for places like South Dakota. And
we'll have to see what the congressional reaction is to that, because right. I'm assuming that can be. That can be overridden.
It would take Congress to do it.
Okay, Jeff Litterick, in the final moments of the show, any hot topics that you want to pass along today?
Well, I got some good news for those out there like me that like to build their own system stuff. Graphic cards are finally starting to come down in price because the cryptocurrency miners are not buying them in the value they have, and inventory is actually getting up there, so there's going to be some here soon. Looks like some really good deals on high-end video cards. Also, a lot of new CPU news from Intel and AMD, with new AMD motherboards starting to release in Europe. It's actually kind of for the first time in about 3-4 years, I'm getting excited about the performance increases we're going to be seeing in all parts of computers here soon, with the Intel SSD/DRAM memory stuff where your RAM becomes persistent and permanent. Lots of exciting stuff's happening right now in the do-it-yourself building stuff. So on the other news, really watching out for is California's passing, at least for the U.S., the strictest privacy bill ever, and we're going to see how that kind of plays out. it's not quite as bad or as strict as the European one, but it's getting there. So they're kind of taking the lead on privacy laws and privacy rights for individuals in the United States. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works out, because all the tech companies were very, very much against this. They lobbied hard to block this, and even though California depends on them for their budget, they told them, no, you're going to actually have to adhere to privacy. So,
okay.
Interesting developments.
We will have to follow that up on a future episode of the show. And just a couple of minutes, Jeff, but I wanted to ask you particularly, is it the outrage? are people's faces really melting off with Microsoft just bought GitHub? And $7 billion or whatever. But so GitHub is the repository for a bunch of open source software. It's a community.
Yeah, one of a couple. So it's not the only one, but yes.
It seems like an unprecedented backlash from the developer community. Is this something that Microsoft needs to care about? Because it's open source, but they've been putting a lot of resources into open source in the last few years anyway, right?
Microsoft has done a little bit of a seesaw roller coaster ride, but they've almost always supported developers in many ways. They've courted developers. Most of the best development tools, bar none, are made by Microsoft. Even many open source people still, use their compilers and stuff, because they really court the developer community, knowing that it pays dividends in Windows apps and stuff like that. And the only time they really stopped is when Apple and the App Store kind of came up, and Google, Microsoft dropped off that support, and then all these app stores popped up, and Microsoft realized they missed a golden opportunity. So they've been very, very big recently in development relations and giving stuff developers and doing the tools developers want. So that's not unsurprising. But there's always a backlash, because Microsoft tends to incorporate open source and then extend it in Microsoft only proprietary ways, and then they make it easy for the developers to lock themselves into Microsoft only ways, and then you lose a lot of the part of the open source. A good example is, most people don't realize this, but .NET, everyone associates .NET with Windows. .NET was open source before Microsoft even saw it. It was a full open source project for quite a while before Microsoft kind of said, hey, this was a cool idea, took it over, put all their stuff, and then put all the proprietary stuff for Microsoft only, and gave it back out to developers, and now everyone associates .NET with Microsoft, when it was primarily an open source framework for years before Microsoft took it over. So
we'll have to see if all the cries of things falling down around our heads are going to be true or not, but we will have to do that on a future show.
Luckily, GitHub has some other brothers and sisters repositories out there, like SourceForge, that they can easily migrate to. So we'll see how it all plays out, but it's not the end of the world. So.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks to our panelists today. And join us on our app or at stpb.org.